The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Welcome, welcome. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Thank you for joining us this evening at Real Life Real Estate Investing. I am Tiffany Ray, president of RIA of Greater Cincinnati, and I am sitting in for Vina Jones Cox today. We're in for an exciting show. We're talking about what is going on in the foreclosure market. Encourage all of you all to call or send your email questions to vinaradio@gmail.com, and the number to call in is 877-772-9658. And we'll be right back after a short break. I was just told that I could go ahead and introduce the guests, so I'm going to do that right away. Thank you for that, Mike. So I believe that we have a very special guest on the phone with us. It's Bill Twyford. And Bill has been in buying pre-foreclosures, wow, for at least 2 decades or so, as far as I can remember. I know that he is known nationwide, and he is also an expert and instructor in the real estate investing field. Welcome, Bill. Are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you, Tiffany?
Hey, Bill. It's good to hear your voice. Yes.
Oh, you too.
Yeah.
You too. It's great to be on the show with you.
I'm sorry that it's not Vina speaking with you, but I was super excited to talk about this topic that is very, very close and passionate to my heart. Worked a long time in loss mitigation at several banks, and so I'm excited to be aboard this show with you this evening. So before we go to... Go ahead.
That sounds great. It sounds like you've been down the road. You know what you're doing. That's great.
I have a couple of bruises and skin knees, but it's quite all right. We could talk about it a little more. So Bill, why don't you tell us a little bit more about your current real estate business and what you're doing with pre-foreclosures deals that you're finding? And what's your favorite thing in the market right now?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I like working a lot of foreclosures that are short on time. I mean, we work a lot of foreclosures in different markets in the country, and we're seeing, you know, foreclosures really, really starting to click up in a lot of different markets in the country. My favorite thing really is to work direct to seller, work directly with the homeowner, somebody that's, you know, 30, 60, 90, 120 days late, maybe going through a divorce, maybe in foreclosure, maybe going through bankruptcy, whatever it is. Look for those people that are in distress that need help so I can help them through their situation. Sometimes we get to help them do a modification, or we help them, you know, get a forbearance agreement, something like that. Now, we don't do it for them, but we give them a little bit of advice on what they can do, because you have to remember, and you know, working with a bank has such an unfair advantage on a homeowner, because a homeowner really doesn't know what they're doing, you know, and the only people they really have out there that will give them options is the bank, you know, other than us. So what we like to do is give homeowners options on what they can do, walk them down the path they want to go to where we can help them either save their house or we can buy their house. So that's kind of where we spend our time is working direct to seller. We don't do a lot of stuff off of the MLS. We go direct to the source that's in distress and work those deals.
Yeah, and I think that that's very interesting, because, you know, when you're about to lose your house or you're past due, that's a very trying time for people. And I heard you say help them to the pathway of which they want to go. So I think that that is very equitable, and it probably helps to keep your customers at ease as well.
Well, it does. And the thing that's nice about it, 9 out of 10 homeowners don't want to sell their house when they get behind in payments. So we always teach people, listen, you've got to put the homeowner's needs first. It's not about you. It's not about the money. It's about the homeowner trying to help them navigate through this situation that is really traumatic for them. So 9 out of 10 don't want to sell their properties. So we don't go up and talk to the homeowner about, hey, we can close quick. We can buy your house. You know, that's not our approach. Our approach is giving them options, listening to their story, helping them navigate through the path they want to go down. And that's really critical, because you'll never hear us come up and say, hey, how you doing? We buy houses. I see you're in foreclosure. Homeowners don't want to hear that. And, you know, if people are out doing that, they're going to be less successful, because 90% of them don't want to sell.
Yeah, there are definitely emotional ties to it. I mean, for most people, it's the only and biggest investment that they've ever made. So I definitely get it. There's a wise financial lady, Susie Orman, that says people first, then things. And it sounds like that's very much your approach. Question for you. Go right ahead.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, yes, it is. And that's the thing. I mean, you know, Zig Ziglar used to always say, if you give people what they want, you'll always get what you want.
Exactly. Yeah, so, you know, looking at some stats out there, they don't necessarily seem to match the reality. So I was looking at a report from the St. Louis Fed, and it said that loan default rates are only 1.9%, which is, like, historically low, if you know anything about the numbers. But what our members are seeing and what they're hearing from potential sellers who are in pre-foreclosure is that that's not the case. So are you seeing anything like that in your market in Colorado? What's going on in Colorado and Iowa?
Well, you know, in a lot of the Colorado market that we're working, we work about 6 counties in the Colorado market, and foreclosures, we're seeing 30 to 40 in each county every couple weeks. So about 25 a week in each county, which is 100 a month. It's really starting to crest, because we're in what we call an early downturn in the Denver market. And the same with the Atlanta market. You know, I was just there last weekend speaking. And it's funny you break this up, because when I was down there speaking, one of the RIA members down there, I think he's probably the president or vice president, said, you know, for the last year, we've only had 1,200 foreclosures in about 5 counties around Atlanta. And he says, that number never changes. And he goes, that's not right. Something's going on. And I don't know what it is, Tiffany, if it's, you know, if a homeowner falls. Because to me, default is if you fall 30, 60 days behind, you know, it's a non-performing, it's a defaulted loan. So I look at it, I think, that maybe banks are looking at these, and if they're working with homeowners to work something out, let's say they're 3 or 4 or 5 months behind, and they're trying to work out a modification or forbearance or a COVID, you know, forbearance or modification, then maybe they're not counting those numbers as non-performing notes and defaulted loans, which, you know, that's really a no-no to me, because I think, you know, if they're not paying monthly, then they're a defaulted note.
That's right. Late is late. And I've been just given the cue that we're going to take a break. And thank you for tuning in, you guys. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Real Live Real Estate Investing, and I am Tiffany Ray. So don't forget to call us with your questions and comments. The number is 877-772-9658, and if you just cannot call, we can take emails as well. That is vena radio@gmail.com. I have a special invitation for you guys. If you want to learn more about how investors are dealing with sellers and pre-foreclosures, please come out and join us tomorrow night at Cincinnati RIA's monthly online chapter meeting. So we're going to be talking with a panel of experienced pre-foreclosure buyers, including myself, Bill's wife, Dwan, and Lori Wolf, who will be sharing how they find, negotiate, creatively purchase pre-foreclosures, how they deal with sellers both equitably and kindly. And you can register and get your link at CincinnatiREIA.com. That is CincinnatiREIA.com. Hey, Bill, are you with me still?
I'm still here.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the chart and I don't see our lines open and I don't see any emails, so we're going to keep going with some questions here. Are you ready for a few questions for me?
I'm ready to go, whatever you need. And, you know, Tiffany, you're doing such a great job, I got to tell you.
Oh, well, that's very kind. Thanks. I'm hoping that Vina's out there somewhere listening and that she thinks the same thing as well. But it, like I said, this is my baby, foreclosure and all defaults. And so I was excited to be able to sub for her today. So let's keep the questions rolling. And I'd like to ask, so you've been buying mostly pre-foreclosures for a very long time, like including through the recession and recent real estate boom. So is there anything different about sellers now versus, say, pre-COVID, like more equity, further behind, or what would you say is going on there?
Well, you know, we started with a new normal after COVID, I feel. There was a lot of people that quit making payments. A lot of tenants quit making payments to landlords. Landlords struggled. Homeowners got to buy for a while with a lot of the banks and with the COVID going on. And the thing is, they got a little comfortable living without a house payment. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when they start balancing their budget every month and they've gone a year without a house payment because of COVID, you know, now all of a sudden their lifestyle's a little bit different. Their budget's a little bit different because they don't have a house payment figured in there or a rent payment. So the thing of it is, with homeowners, they've had a lot of really free time, I think. And I've noticed the only thing that's really kept things moving is the market's been going up, inventory's been going down. So, you know, with that being said, I think a lot of homeowners still think they're in the kind of a little bit of COVID mindset, like the bank's not going to take their house because of what has happened over the last, you know, 4 years since March of 2020. So I find that homeowners don't believe that the bank is actually going to take their property until it's too late. And, you know, if they bought a home in 2016 and they started falling behind during COVID because they got laid off, and now all of a sudden this house, they bought it at 170 and now it's worth, you know, 280, you know, they've got some equity in their property. And generally when these homeowners fall behind 90-120 days and the foreclosure process is getting ready to start, the best thing for a homeowner to do if they can't save it by a modification is get it on the market, sell it, take your equity, and move on. And that's just a tough thing because homeowners really don't think the bank's going to take their house, you know, after COVID.
Yeah, you hit on a lot of things there. I do agree with you in that we are in a new normal post-COVID. It's funny that you said their budget is different. It reminded me of those interest-only loans where, you know, you got used to making that interest-only payment for 5 years, and then all of a sudden you went out and bought that new car, and then that loan became due where you had to make the full payment, and there just wasn't enough money in the budget. You also raise another interesting point with the equity. What I've seen in the past is you're absolutely right. If a customer homeowner cannot sell the property, but there are tons of equity, the quicker they get it to market, the better, because you'll have an eroded equity situation. You know, those taxes pile up, the insurance piles up, the cost of the actual foreclosure is definitely not cheap these days. So you bring a very interesting point to the conversation when saying, hey, people need to face reality and do something to dispose of that property while there's still money in it for them. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's a huge point. And you touched on one thing right there that a lot of people don't see when it comes to a distressed seller. When here's what happens is the bank will keep the taxes current, mm-hmm. and just start, you know, adding that in to what they need to do to bring it to, you know, cure the default. But the thing is they're not going to keep paying the insurance on the house. So when that insurance lapses on that distressed homeowner, the bank is going to say, listen, your insurance is lapsing here at the end of April, let's say. We need something showing that you've paid the insurance. If not, we're going to put forced insurance on that property. And forced insurance sometimes is three times the price of regular insurance. So now the homeowners are eight payments behind at $2,000 a month, which is $16,000. And now they've got a bill of forced insurance for $4,000 on top of it. So now they're on $20,000 plus attorney's fees and late fees and drive-by fees and all that stuff. And, you know, I'm not telling you anything you don't know because you've been in the business. So it's a homeowner thinks they owe $16,000 when the cure comes back at $23,500. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, what happened?
Exactly.
You know, how did they get so high?
Yeah, that's a reality. Most people don't even look at the total itemization to see what is going on with the costs that are actually incurred during the foreclosure or even the pre-foreclosure process. I think, Bill, I would be a little remiss to go back to that loan modification question or comment that you made a little earlier about maybe the default is not being counted because of the loan modification. And I thought about it because of the taxes and the forced place insurance, or FPI as we call it in the banking industry. Do you think that there is a big disconnect with the homeowner, and do you think that there is a big disconnect with the what is being reported in the industry, maybe because the numbers are being manipulated because we're in an election year, maybe something
well,
like that?
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because I kind of think that too. I mean, I kind of think that something's going on under the scenes, you know, just to try to keep everybody thinking, oh, you know, things are going great. You know, I truly believe we'll start seeing maybe gas prices come down a little bit too, just because it's an election year. Mm-hmm. You know, people don't want to go into an election year, especially a sitting president doesn't want to go into an election year where the real estate market is tanking, you know, and inflation is through the ceiling and gas prices are three times what they were 4 years ago, you know, so they don't want that. So I think there is some stuff going on there. Do we have any proof of it? No. But, you know, it just seems funny that in the states that I work, the foreclosures are going up, and some of the other states, they just say, oh, our foreclosures aren't even going up at all. You know, it's like South Florida right now. I mean, South Florida, condos are starting to take a dive. Well, a condo is the most volatile thing in a market. It's the last one to gain value and the first one to drop in value. So if you really want to see what's going on in your market, watch what's going on with your condos. If they start coming down in price, your market's going to start coming down in price. That's just the way it generally works. So, you know, and I've been through multiple cycles because I've been in real estate since 86. And as an agent in 94, I was an agent for 4 years in the state of Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I do think some of this, there's some games being played with what's true default, what's a not a default, what are we counting, what are we not counting, because even if somebody's in a trial modification for 3 months, now all of a sudden, with a bank, it's generally a performing asset.
That's right.
Because now they've worked something out. Okay? They've worked something out.
And the thing about that is it's really not even a full payment. So, I mean, the numbers could easily be skewed. You know, you come out of a three-payment trial, and it's 90, you're already 60 days, and then you're 3 months on top of that. We're talking 5 months almost at the 180-day mark when you come out of it, and you're probably further along, but they're counting that as current. And that's just it's a dangerous game when you're talking about the inventory that's going to be put out into the population all at once.
Well, and, you know, the thing of it is, you know, and I know that banks have inventory that when a property goes to foreclosure and they turn right around and take it as an REO, a real estate owned, sometimes it sits there for a year.
Mm-hmm.
Because if a bank dumps all their properties on the market at once, it's going to have a bad effect on that market in that area.
Yeah.
So they've got to hold stuff. They're holding things back, and they're just, you know, putting a few things in here and there, a few properties, as they, you know,
Sprinkling.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, they're sprinkling those properties in. I will tell you, I spoke with a gentleman who does the sheriff sale, the sit outs and the sheriff sales, and he was saying that they are just as busy as ever. So that's kind of concerning to me when we don't see the inventory being put on the market in the form of the delinquency rate that's out there. So, yeah, something is going on for sure.
And, you know, my whole thing, when I deal with a homeowner, let's say I'm working with a divorce situation and the husband's gone and the wife is there with two kids and she's going to sale in, you know, 10 days, let's say. You know, I'm going to just tell her, listen, I'm not an attorney. I can't give you legal advice. All I can share with you is what I've seen other homeowners do in your situation to buy time. And they file a Chapter 13 bankruptcy. I mean, if they're untitled, they got the right to do that, and that will push the sale back. And, you know, and let's just say they've got a modification worked out, and they have to start making their payment next month, let's say. Let's just say, you know, they've got 30 days to go to sale, and they've got a modification worked out, and the bank just postpones the sale and pushes it back as long as they make their payments. I always tell, like, a single mom or somebody that has nowhere to go, I always say, listen, make those payments every month for the next 3 months, 4 months, whatever your trial mod is. And I said, get a permanent modification. And once you get that, they'll withdraw the foreclosure. Then if you have to fall behind after that, because then the bank has to start the process all over again. So what I'm doing is I'm trying to help this homeowner buy time to try to stay in the house because they got nowhere to go. So I can't put, a wife and two kids out on the street just because I can make 50 grand. You know, I'm not going to do that. That's not what I do.
That's right. Just real estate the right way. And we're going to take a break. And then when we come back, we're going to be asking some questions that I see are coming in on the email. Is that okay with you, Bill?
Yep, that's fine.
All righty. Welcome back, everybody, to Real Life Real Estate Investing. Today, we're speaking with Bill, and we're talking about a really juicy topic, foreclosures in the marketplace. Bill, are you there with me?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. So before we take a question or two, I want to remind you guys that you are able to call in. The number is 877-772-9658, and you can also send your emails, and there's a new email address. I was going to say Ask Vena, but it's venaradio@gmail.com. It's been so many years since she's had that same one. You change it, it's like, oh my God, we've got to reprogram ourselves. A little while ago, Bill, you and I had spoke about equity, and maybe even eroded equity, in some of those properties. So what about the customer that purchased or bought a house relatively recently, and they have little or no equity because they didn't put a lot of money down or they defaulted early? Are you still going to be trying to work short sales on those?
Well, you know, it just depends. It depends on how the numbers work out. Yeah, we're going to be working short sales on those. Short sales are not a real hot topic right now. I mean, banks aren't doing a lot of them. They are in a lot of the Rust Belt, the area where you guys are in. Also, when it comes to the Midwest, parts of the Midwest. But, you know, you're not getting a lot of shorts right now in other markets like Florida and California and Arizona and Vegas and stuff like that and Seattle. But that is going to come because all markets are cyclical. You know, they go through their six cycles and stuff. You know, they go through, you know, an early downturn or full downturn, a bottom, an early recovery, a full recovery. You know, they just go through these different cycles because they're cyclical. So short sales is something that's coming, and that's why it's nice to learn about them, nice to know about them, and nice to go out there and really understand why banks short sale and how they short sale and what you have to do to get that short sale approved. And some of these people don't have a lot of equity, but, you know, if they bought a house 3 years ago and, you know, the market was, you know, still climbing and they got a 2-3% loan, 3.5%, 4%, you know, sometimes you can rent it out for what the payment is and take it subject to. But, you know, if there's not a lot of equity or any at all, most of the time we're going to try to short sale those. And short sailing is just getting the bank to accept less than payment in full. So, you know, they may have a $300,000 house, a homeowner's of $290,000, and we're going to try to get that shorted around $180,000 to $200,000.
And, you know, Bill, sometimes I think people get stuck on the terminology, you know, pre-foreclosure, short sales, all nomenclature. I guess I always call them now, because our market has significantly changed, is they may be a sale of sorts, but I call them full sales. And the reason I say that is because there's a lot of equity, like what we've been talking about all along. There still has to be approval by the bank, even if they take a little haircut off the top, but maybe not as deep of a concession as we were used to back in the, you know, 07, 08, and before days. So I think that's something to consider.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, the thing of it is, I did a short sale one time with a person at Bank of America, and, you know, I told him, I said, listen, you know, the guy's behind 23 payments right now. You know, so we went through the interest they're losing. We went through, you know, they're keeping the taxes current, you know. And realistically, when you really do the numbers and the way that we teach the three offers of doing short sales, banks lose anywhere from 35 to 40% of the value of the home when they do a short, because it's just, you know, I mean, and we can go through all those numbers that I always, in like when we do a class anywhere in the country, I always say, listen, you guys give me a number, tell me what you want to buy it for, and I'm going to show you how you can buy it for that number. And I'm going to show you how the process works and how we're going to go ahead and build our case for the bank. Because homeowners think emotionally, banks think logically.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not an emotional thing with the bank. It's a logical thing for the bank.
Yeah, there's some rules that go along with those short sales. You mentioned the process. I know it too. Even from a banking perspective, to be daunting. I mean, there's so many different rules and regulations and paperwork that goes with it. I just tell some people it's the gritty process, and you have to work your way through the gritty process for each independent banking company out there. So that's something to consider.
Yeah, you're right. And the thing of it is, it's all about getting contacts at the bank, you know, because you have, you know, the people that just answer the telephones, and then you have the people that make the decisions. So it's all about, you know, getting in, talking to people, knowing who to talk to, and getting past the gatekeepers, the people that answer the telephones. So, and you know, being in that industry, how many files you have on your desk at one given time or in your portal. So, you know, and those numbers I know are going up, because I have some friends that work for Wells and for Bank of America, and they said, yeah, the numbers are really starting to compile.
Well, that's twofold, right? Because, you said something about the paper files. I actually worked when we had paper files.
Right.
Not trying to tell my age, but yeah, most of them are in portal now. But to your point, Bill, people don't realize that the market did let go of several of those loss mitigators. And so not only do you have to ramp back up on the staffing and train people, but then there's this influx of files that's being placed on their desk. So you're right. It's going to be a lot of files to look through.
Yeah. And my sister, she, oh gosh, 8-9 years ago worked for Ocwen, and they're out of West Palm Beach. But she worked out of Houston in an office, and her job was to do the paperwork for the motion for relief from stays and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
for bankruptcy files. And she goes, I've got like 450 files on my desk. The most I can do in a day is about 45, just turning them over. And she goes, I'm getting 40, 50 new ones every day. She goes, I can't stay up with it, and they won't hire more people.
Mm-hmm.
And she only lasted about a year and a half and just burned her out. So that's why I tell people, too, loss mitigation is a stressful job, too, on your end. So, you know, a lot of people don't last long in that business, and then the banks are retraining.
all the time, constantly retraining. So you mentioned bankruptcy. So let's take a question here. And this one is from Rob Garcia in Chicago. And it's to you, Bill.
I know Rob.
How do you talk to people who have just survived the auction date by either bankruptcy or getting canceled or continued? Now that they have shown themselves to be trying to keep their house, is the conversation different?
Well, the conversation is different. When I'm going up to a homeowner, you know, they're going to give me an objection right off the bat when I go through my script. And basically my script is, hi, my name is Bill. I was at the courthouse here today. I notice you have a pending problem with your property, which means you'd be one, two, or three payments behind. We specialize in helping homeowners buy time to stay in their home. What I'd like to do is give you this free information package, you 10 options on what you can do to buy time. What are you working on right now with your mortgage company? And they say, oh, no, we're fine. We're going to go ahead and file a bankruptcy. I always say bankruptcy, interesting. So what bankruptcy you file in Chapter 7 or Chapter 13? And they say, well, you know, we've been talking to our attorney and we're going to file Chapter 13. Say, do you mind if I share with you some of the loopholes in the bankruptcy process I've seen homeowners use to maximize their time to stay in their home? And they almost always say yes. Well, then I have a conversation with them on the 341 hearing and turning in a plan. And if you can't make the plan work, you know, you can file a motion to amend the plan. And, you know, and to just make sure you stay up on payments with the mortgage company, because when you're court ordered to make those payments, the minute you quit making those payments, they could file a motion for relief from the stay. And once they get kicked out or they get that approved, a homeowner then really can't go back and refile for 180 days, and they're going to put themselves in a bad situation. So, that's, you know, basically I'm establishing value when I'm talking to a homeowner at the door.
Yeah,
I'm establishing value, giving them information.
Good point on that a motion for relief, MFR, and they can dismiss that 13 with prejudice as well, and so they wouldn't be able to even go back and file the Chapter 13 to repay. Yeah,
that's exactly right. Mm-hmm. They got to, because of Rule 109G, they've got to stay out for 180 days.
Yep.
Now, you know, and the bankruptcy trustee could file a motion to dismiss if they don't turn in their paperwork right, you know? And I mean, there's just a lot of little things like that, angles that I know, and I know how to work, and I just give the information to homeowners, but I always disclose I'm not an attorney. All I can do is share with you I've seen other homeowners do to buy time and maximize their time in their property, you know?
And that's
so, and I always tell, oh, I'm sorry.
No, go right ahead. You always tell?
I always tell, you know, the investors, my students and stuff, and I say, listen, you can't threaten bankruptcy with the bank because, you know, they'll just say, listen, you know, we'll just get it dismissed, or if they do it, you know, we'll just file a motion for relief from stay, and you know, and if you don't know how to handle that objection, then, you know, you're going to lose because the first person that runs out of script loses. So you got to know how the timeline works. You got to know about the 341 hearing, the Rule 109G, the different motions and things like that. You know, otherwise the banks are just going to eat your lunch.
And that's what makes this foreclosure market thing that's getting ready to hit us such a – it's an interesting topic to me. And like I said, it's very much one of my favorites. I think we have time for one more question, and then after that I think we'll be taking a break. So this one is from Robert Raskin, and he says, Bill, what are your guidelines for renting back to foreclosure sellers or allowing them to continue in the home after you purchase? Do you allow sellers to rent back or occupy, and for how long?
My answer to that is no, never do I ever do that. Now, I've done over 300 of those back in the late 90s, early 2000s. However, the only way I did it to be safe is I build a triangle, basically. The top of the triangle is the homeowner. They write a contract to me. I mean, I write a contract. I buy it from them. And then I sell it to an investor that is willing to lease it back to the homeowner. I'm out of the way. It's two contracts, it's two deeds, but I never do that anymore, because if a homeowner quits making payments to the mortgage company, they're going to quit making payments to you. And that's a good way to get in trouble. A lot of people that might be weak on their objection handlers, weak on their scripts, may tell homeowners that they will go ahead and let them stay in the house and they'll have a chance to buy it back anytime in the next 2 to 3 years. I just don't like to play that game. It's a dangerous game. I want the homeowners out, and I want a clean deal.
Totally understand that. And I believe that our time is up, and we're going to go to break. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. And we're back, guys. We're talking about foreclosure and what is going on or not going on in the market. This is Tiffany Ray sitting in for Vena Jones Cox. Reminder that we do have a few minutes left, so we're still able to take your calls at 1-877-772-9658. And for those of you who cannot call in, you may send an email at Vena, V-E-N-A, radio at gmail.com. I'm here today and I'm talking with Bill Twyford. Bill, you hear a whole lot of people talking about subject twos. What do you think about that? Do you ever buy property subject to the existing loan from sellers in pre-foreclosure? And if so, how do you pay the seller their equity?
Well, you know, the thing of it is, I do take a lot of sub twos. And when I take subject twos, I honestly don't really care what's owed versus, you know, the value of the home. If the numbers work and I can get money up front, give the homeowner a little bit of money, have them put the property, deed the property into a trust like the Miss Smith Family Land Trust, and then I'll be the beneficiaries of it and I'll have somebody be the trustee. And what I'll do is I'll take those if the numbers work, and then I'll turn around and sell them and create a note. However, though, you have to remember, if you're doing subject twos, you're still tied to that deal, even though you sold it and created a note, because your fiduciary duty is to that seller that subject twoed you the property. So you're tied to that deal until the person you sell the property to refinances and pays off that original mortgage. Banks don't really care who makes the mortgage payments, and you probably know this from working at a bank. I always tell, because it always comes up in class, and they always say, hey, listen, you know, what about the due on sale? Well, you know, the due on sale states that the lender, at the lender's option, has the right to call this loan due on sale or accelerate the note if there's a transfer in title. So the thing is I don't mind taking these as long as we bring the payments current and then we keep the mortgage payments current every single month. A bank doesn't really care who's making those payments. And I always tell people in the classes that we teach, I always say, listen, you know what, if you've got a mortgage on your house, go down, get a cashier's check, put the loan number on the bottom, put the name of the bank that you're paying or their servicing company, and on the remitter, put Donald Duck or Mickey Mouse. They'll still cash it. They'll apply it to the mortgage. They don't care who's making the payment as long as somebody is. So, yes, I take them subject to. I get the homeowners a little bit of equity, but let's just say it's a $400,000 house and they owe $350,000. Well, people think, and homeowners think, well, we got $50,000 equity. No, they don't. If they put it on the market and sold it, they would have to pay realtor fees. And if they're short on time, and a lot of sub twos I take, you know, they're getting ready to go into the foreclosure process. Maybe they're 3 months, 4 months behind. And if the numbers work, even if it's a $400,000 house and they owe $420 on it, I'm okay with that. Because they might have done a modification 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and got a 2% loan. And if that's the case, you know what? Numbers are probably going to work for me. So, and I always, you know, I always use the example in class. I always say I've got 369 feet of oceanfront property in Malibu, California. It's got a 4,200 square foot house on it. It's worth $11 million. I want 15. Who wants it? Nobody wants it. then I say, all I want is $1,000 down, $1,000 a month. Now everybody in class wants it. So I really don't care what's owed versus what the value is. I care about the numbers, and I care about the homeowner's motivation to get out of that situation. And that's a whole other call that you and I could do, is all about homeowner's motivation.
Oh, definitely. A structure matters for the most part. And then you're right. There's all types of options and things that you can do with the motivated seller. Look, it looks like we have a phone call. We can take line one now.
Yes.
Hey, Russell.
Yes, hi.
Russell, are you there?
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Russell.
Yes, I'm here.
What's your question? Yes. Thanks for joining.
Well, I sent it as an email, so I wasn't sure if you guys, hoping this is not repetitive. But,
it's okay. I was going to read it next, but you go right ahead since we have you live. I'd rather talk to you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. How to best get myself back into going out and assisting homeowners. I'm in Norah, Connecticut, so I'm kind of close to the Bridgeport, Connecticut area.
So you're looking to invest in that area? Is that what you're
yes.
saying? Okay.
Yeah. The greater New York State area.
So greater New York State area. So if I was you, I'd try to stay into the Connecticut market, the Rhode Island market, stuff like that. Laws are a little bit different there. Versus what they are in New York State, because New York State, everything has to run through an attorney. And if a distressed seller, if you write a contract for a distressed seller, what happens is that distressed seller has to be represented by an attorney. So if you're taking a subject to, that attorney's not going to be really on board with trying to help you get that closed, because he's representing the seller. So, to get you back out there, I'll tell you the fastest way to get out and motivate yourself is get yourself a list of foreclosures in your area and go out and just start talking to them. Knock on their door, get in front of them, get on the phone and start calling them, and get a bunch of denial, get a bunch of no's and things like that. Mm-hmm. And what that will do is it will remotivate you, because there's nothing more powerful in this business than face-to-face with the homeowner, because sooner or later you're going to have to get face-to-face with the seller. And getting good at it is the key to between making $100,000 a year and $500,000 a year.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Not everybody wants to
Thank
do
you.
That.
Yeah, I'm definitely...
But you know what? Huh? It's the fastest way to get a deal is to go out and get in front of people.
That's right. Exactly. Motivation begets more motivation.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, people ask me all the time, what's the fast way to get a deal? I said, find out where your buyers want to buy, find out who's in distress in that area, and then go get them.
There you go. Yeah.
Okay.
Anything else specifically for Connecticut? Yeah.
Yeah. No, and that's the thing. I mean, Connecticut, it's a good market for that. And a lot of people, I've noticed in a lot of markets, are moving out away from downtown. So that's a fluctuation that goes every 7 to 10 years, too. They move into town because it's cheaper, then they move out of town because they get more space.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I don't want to forget to tell you guys about getting on the call tomorrow, too. Right, Tiffany?
Mm-hmm. I'm already on it.
Cincinnati Rhea.
Absolutely.
Yeah, good.
We're going to be talking more foreclosure. There's going to be a panel of experienced pre-foreclosure folks. I believe your wife, Dawn, is going to be on that call with us tomorrow.
My wife. And you know what's so funny? Dawn, she's got the registered trademark for the word short sale in the real estate business. Go figure.
Isn't that neat? Like all these years. And I think I just learned that out about her maybe a year and a half ago. I was like, wow, I love that thing.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
And guys, this is free and open to the public. You can get your link at CincinnatiRhea.com, and we hope to. It's totally online, and you guys should come out and continue the foreclosure party. Yeah.
Grill.
Thank you very much.
It's going to be recorded, of course, right?
Yeah, absolutely, Russell. But we hope you can make it, and we hope you bring more questions. Thank you for joining our call today. I think we have just a couple of more minutes, Bill, and I wanted to read this report. I was looking at the Adam data, and it's saying that foreclosures were up like 4% annually and 2% over the previous quarters. What are we to make of this? Like, what do we need to tell our listeners to do to be prepared for what's coming? What's forthcoming?
Well, the thing of it is, like you said, 4% annually, but 2% over the last quarter. So if it's 2% over the last quarter, it's 8%. It's going to be 8% annually, probably in the next year, maybe even more. So the thing we have to start looking at is, again, is if you're in a market somewhere in the country here, you know, whether it's Florida or California or Utah, wherever it is, start looking at what's going on in your condos in your area, because that is a good ticker for what's going on. That's a good pulse for what's going on in your market. A lot of people don't think that, but man, I study markets all over the country, and I invest in about 5 different states. So my whole thing is I really look at the pulse of what's going on with condos and things like that.
And we appreciate that tip. Listen, Bill, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today. I could talk about this subject with you all night, but we are out of time. So,
well,
listeners,
good.
Again.
All right. I love it. You did great.
I appreciate it. Thank you so very much.
You.
Yes, sir. Right. Come and check us out, Cincinnati REIA, and happy investing, you guys, until we meet again.